This is episode number 2 with former Kookaburra, now Hockey New South Wales coaching director, Warren Birmingham. Welcome to Inside the D Hockey, where we try to bring you the best field hockey coaches, players, trainers, and thinkers all under one roof. Now, thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the journey begin. Hi, and thanks for joining us. My name is Peter Tate. Recently, I sat down with Warren Birmingham. As a kid, growing up, I watched Warren in the late 80s, early 90s, in those days either playing the Champions Trophy, World Cup, or Olympics. One of the key memories I have as a kid was of the 1992 Olympic final, which Australia played Germany in the gold medal playoff. Warren spoke at the end of the game and obviously disappointed at the result for the team, not to get the result or gold. Warren showed great leadership and character in what would have been a tough time to speak to the Australian media. A little bit of background on Warren's hockey resume, which is a pretty impressive one to say the least. Warren was in the Australian hockey team from 1982 to 1995, played in 4 World Cups, one of those a gold medal in 1986, played in 2 Olympic Games, 92 and 1988, only player ever to be selected in 10 consecutive World 11 teams from 1986 to 1995, was captain of the world team from 89 to 93, was twice selected as the best player in the world in 1989 and 1992, played for Australia 200 times and was captain 130 times. Warren was inducted into the Australian Hockey Hall of Fame in 2008 as an inaugural member, as one of the best 11 players to ever represented Australia from 1908 to 2010. Warren is currently now a level 3 accredited hockey coach and was coach of the 2014 Hockey New South Wales Arrows team, which is our women's team that won the AHL title. This year in 2015 was a New South Wales men's AHL coach, being the Waratahs, and is currently the coaching director of Hockey New South Wales. We discuss where Warren started his hockey and some of his memories as a player. There's also some great tips for players and coaches alike. I hope you enjoy our discussion and interview. Cheers, thanks. So you grew up in Corrigal, it's only a pretty small sort of place, isn't it? Like 2,000, less than 2,000 people? Yeah.
I don't think they'd have 2,000. I always used to joke and say they had 500 and they had 499 the day that I left. Wonderful place. So Corrigal has always been fairly strong as far as Hockey New South Wales Juniors are concerned. Located not too far from Byron Bay and Lennox Head. And we've always had enormous focus on hockey in that town. Many other sports have tried to start up in the town, but they've always failed because the town won't support anything apart from hockey. Wonderful place to grow up, and I've got a lot to thank Corrigal for. Interesting life. I come from a fairly moderate income family, some would say poor, as most people in Corrigal are. I mean, it's not a wealthy town. I come from a one-income family, and my father saw me play a game of hockey when I was 4, and the next game that he actually saw me play, I was 20 playing for Australia. And that might sound strange to a lot of people, because mum and dad were married for 50 years, and if dad was still alive today, they'd be still married, would be 60 years, but dad worked 7 days a week. He built schools for a living, and obviously he can only build so many schools in a small town, so he did a lot of regional work out in Western New South Wales, building high schools and primary schools. And when he was home, realistically, we had 3 kids that all played a regional level of sport, and only having 1 income and a moderate income at that, I mean, he basically worked 7 days a week. So he was always there, and I had a really good relationship with him, but the bottom line is that he never actually got to see me play as a kid. Mum was always a taxi, as most mums are, and she used to make two or three trips to Lismore every Saturday and Sunday, transporting kids from Corrigal, and particularly myself and my brother, to be able to fulfil our dreams, I suppose, of trying to be a reasonable hockey player.
Yeah,
How did you get into hockey, and how did that come about? You're only four,
so. Yeah, I started when I was four. You probably don't get too much choice if you come to Corica. I mean, it's sort of your rite of passage if you want to be, if you want to stay there. But no, my uncle used to play hockey, and he actually got quite ill, and he couldn't play anymore. And I went and saw him in hospital, and he actually gave me his hockey stick, and that's pretty much how it started. And I wasn't supposed to play that year, and I went down to training and signed myself up into the, believe it or not, in those days, the under-12s, and came home and told Mum, and Mum sort of said, well, I can't do that, and then she rang up Dad, and Dad said, of course he can. So that's how it all started, and it's really interesting because from the day that I started playing hockey, I just absolutely loved it, and I used to go around, and I remember at a very young age telling people that I was going to be the best player in the world and the best player in Australia, and obviously not having any idea what that ever meant. But, you know, that was always my goal, to somehow one day play for Australia and, you know, enjoy the experience.
Yeah. So where did you sort of start to, I guess, know that you could, there was those other opportunities in that, where you could start to sort of progress, and where you started to maybe break to the next level? Because did Corakai go to the state championships on there?
Far North Coast. So I suppose my first number one goal I remember really clearly was to play for New South Wales in the under-14s. And I just remember that was where I was, well, what I wanted to do. And I got a chance to play for Far North Coast. I was only 11 at the time in the under-14s. We went to Wagga to play the state championships, and we beat Sydney in the semi-finals, and then we beat Goulburn in the final and won the state championships, and I got selected into the under-14 state side. Mum got a bit of a shock seeing I was only 11, but that was when I first remember thinking, wow, you know, this is good. As far as being able to, you know, get the tracksuit off my back and wash it, Mum had a bit of trouble because that's just sort of like my pride and joy, and I still maintain today that, you know, there's a number of tracksuits that I've been lucky enough to get over the years, but the one of the five that I really value was my first under-14 New South Wales tracksuit, which still certainly, I don't have it, but it would certainly be on the wall if I had it, for sure.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So when did you make, so you, what age did you, because you moved to Sydney, so what age was that you made the move?
So it was sort of funny because, again, coming from a non-affluent family as far as income is concerned, I always wanted to be an architect. And Mum and Dad never had the funds to be able to put me through university. So at the age of 16, I moved to Sydney by myself. And I had a really, let's say challenging 2 years living by myself down here with no support. I had a bedsitter room out of Coogee. And I had to work during the day. I went to school of the night to get my year 11 and 12. And obviously played hockey both of a weekend and the morning and in between school sessions. That was a really, really tough 2 years, and I probably wouldn't prescribe it for most people. Out of those 2 years, I suppose I learnt a lot in respect to what it was really required. It really formulated your ideas on whether you actually wanted to pursue that life or not, because it was really, really tough, like really tough. Living in Sydney, coming from a town of 500 people, not having any money, not having any real friends. I was playing first grade at the time for Glebe, and all the guys were somewhere between 23 and 28. They had already had they had established lives. Realistically, I was only very, very young. So I'll never forget those 2 years. The good part about that is, as I said, it formulated some real clear objectives in relation to whether I actually wanted to become an Australian hockey player or not. Taught me a lot of things, probably made me too tough. That toughness certainly helped me in my hockey career. Probably didn't help me as an individual, but as a hockey player, it certainly helped me because of what you have to endure to get through that.
Yeah, I mean, you're putting everything on the line, you know, like you're saying, leaving a small town and coming to the big smoke, and it would have been fairly sort of daunting. So what age was that?
It wasn't daunting, but there was no plan B.
There was no plan B, so you'd put it all on the line.
What age was that?
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, it's the 13th of July, 1979, that I actually made that move.
Okay.
I remember the date. I remember the transition, and I remember the first 2 weeks living rough on the street because I wasn't going to tell Mum and Dad I didn't have accommodation. And yeah, yeah, they were They were tough days.
Yeah. So do you have any, what about your early sort of influences? I mean, maybe Corakai or Sydney, what, were there some key influential people that, from your perspective that you could sort of bounce ideas off, or at least, that word mentor sort of goes around, but...
Yeah, so, the programs we've got now in sport, which are wonderful, weren't formulated then. Yeah. The pathway to playing for Australia was probably much more simplistic. It was being able to establish yourself in the New South Wales, what we called senior team in those days, which is now the AHL team. From there, you went to the Australian Championships. The Australian selectors pretty much got one look at you for 2 weeks and then made up their mind on whether they wanted to put you into the Australian squad.
Yeah.
And that was the pathway. I mean, to do that, I joined Glebe Hockey Club, and I did that because there was a coach there, or a past player, called Pat Nyland.
Yep.
Pat was a triple Olympian, and I always had an association with him when I came down in the New South Wales Juniors.
Yep.
Glebe used to be very influential in looking after the Far North Coast kids, and so therefore we built up a strong relationship there. And the reason I went to Glebe was because Pat was there, and Pat was really very influential in the first 2 to 3 years. Of me being there, both from a hockey perspective, but I think also looking back now, he was probably had an eye out what I was doing off the field as well.
So what were your first opportunity to play when you broke into that Opens team and that? Can you remember that?
I nearly moved to Queensland because I selected in the under-21 New South Wales side when I was 16, so I was in there for 5 years, but I was having enormous difficulty getting any credibility in relation to being an AHL player or getting selected into that squad.
Yeah.
So that was really tough and really frustrating, and I'd sort of made up my mind that maybe I should move to Queensland to give myself a crack up there. Coming from up near the border, I had lots of mates that actually I grew up with that played in the Queensland side. And that was looking very promising, and just very, very coincidentally, an England side were touring, and one of the guys in the AHL side got injured on the Saturday. I got a phone call on the Saturday night. I went and played against England, played pretty well, got man of the match, and got admitted to the New South Wales squad for the following Australian Championships, and it obviously stayed and played for New South Wales. But that was probably the entry level into the pathway at that point in time, and I'm not quite sure what would have happened if that didn't occur, but I believe in you just have to play well, and you have to play well consistently. And I've always said to the kids, if you play really, really well, it doesn't matter. Somebody is going to walk past the hockey field one day and see you, and make sure you're playing well on that day, because you never know where it could lead you.
So you first break into the Australian team. I'm sure that's a pretty sort of fond memory. What can you remember when that announcement sort of, or you found out about that? Was that done at the national titles, was it? Or was it done separately and after?
No, well, we went to the, so this was 1982.
Yep.
We went to the national championships in Melbourne, and New South Wales played well. We made the semi-finals and just missed out on the final, but we had a very young side, which was a bit of a changing of the guard. And from that, I then got picked into the Australian under 21 side. And pretty much looking back on it now, I got picked as the fourth halfback, or the reserve halfback in those days, into the Australian under 21. Went away from Malaysia for the Junior World Cup side, and ended up playing every game at centre half or centre midfielder, and got runner up in player of the tournament, the Junior World Cup. And then in those days, they picked 6 athletes that that joined the Australian 16. In modern day terms, they call that the development side, or the development squad, and got picked up in that for a top 10 world tournament in Melbourne in December 1982, and that was my first initiation into, let's say, the Kookaburras.
Yeah. Okay. Which ended up being a pretty long and very successful sort of career and.
It's interesting because you never feel as though that you're ready to retire or you're ready to give it up. And from 1982 through to 1995, that was a good stint. You always feel as though your best performance is around the corner when you're an elite level athlete. And my mantra was really simple. I just always thought it was about maximising your ability and maximising every opportunity that you took. And, you know, even when I was captain of the Australian side, I used to get butterflies before they read the team out, even though I knew what the team was going to be, because it's just another opportunity to be able to play for Australia, yeah, and another opportunity to be able to play with some of the best players in the world and hopefully beat the opposition that you're playing.
Yeah. What was one of your biggest highlights, a couple of your biggest highlights playing for the Kookaburras that sort of stands out?
Oh, wow. I mean, I really find that difficult to answer, because yeah, every time you play for Australia, and I know it's a cliche, it's just a wonderful occasion. I never, ever undervalued or devalued that opportunity. It didn't matter when the occasion was. Obviously, playing in Olympic Games and playing for Australia is a really special thing, because it's something that as a hockey player you probably grow up aspiring to be. And I'll never forget, I wasn't actually playing, but when you go out on your first Olympics and you walk down the tunnel, and you go and do that first right-hand turn, and you walk out onto the running track, and as you're walking around there, you look up and see the crowd and see the television cameras. And I suppose as a young kid growing up in the country, that was my vision or my memories of the Olympic Games. And to be able to actually do that, you go, wow, I'm here. So those moments are always, very, very special. From a playing point of view, you know, playing in Champions Trophies, World Cup finals, Olympic Game finals, those sort of things are memories that are still very vivid, and things that you would love to be able to do today again. But obviously age isn't so kind to you, so I mean, you've got to move on and do other things. But no, just playing for Australia is something I always wanted to do, and just so happy that I had an opportunity to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Playing for New South Wales was really special to me. Playing for New South Wales, as I say to the AHL boys, is very, very different to playing for Australia. It's a unique environment. I mean, we all come from different but similar backgrounds in New South Wales. And to be able to get those guys together and play for New South Wales is a really, was a really special thing for me. But talking to the guys in Darwin this year, the AHL is exactly the same nowadays as what it was for me. So that's great. That's a great tradition.
Yeah. What's some of the best players that you got to play against, or the toughest, you know, maybe some of the hardest players that you could, that sort of stands out, that you played up against in your career?
I was really lucky. Yeah. I was really lucky because they used to pick a World 11 team after every major tournament, whether that be a Champions Trophy or a World Cup or Olympic Games. And I was very, very lucky that I got the opportunity of being able to play in those teams consistently for 10 years. So the guys that used to probably cause you the most difficulty and challenge, often you'd end up playing with them against a host nation for some sort of charity event, which was a wonderful experience. But the guys that, in my day, that I really remember as far as being, let's say, ball-carrying players were concerned, was Shabazz from Pakistan, who was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Stefan Bloscher, who was a German midfield striker. Taco van der Honnet, who was a Dutch striker from obviously Holland. They're the sort of players. I was really, really fortunate though to play with some of the world's best players. Mark Hager at centre striker for me was an absolute privilege to be able to play behind. As being centre midfielder, we had a great combination, and particularly, I suppose, from a defensive point of view, to be able to play with Ken Walk from Glebe, but also New South Wales, and then to be able to play at least 200 internationals with him at the elite level was something that was great. But, you know, there was also the opportunity when I first came into the Australian side, I started playing hockey for Australia, and I was actually, I remember in the 1986 World Cup final, I was playing centre-half, and before the game, I was a little bit nervous because I was pretty young, and it was my first major international grand final. And I looked around the field and I had the two guys that I always aspired to emulate. One was playing left half, which was Trevor King, and the guy on the right-hand side was our captain, David Bell. And they're the guys, they're the two guys in particular that I'd always grown up wanting to be like. Yeah. And all of a sudden, I mean, you look on the field and, you know, one's playing on the right-hand side and one's playing on the left-hand side. So those sort of things are special moments to me, but they're also very, very comforting. I mean, when you're a centre-half, and you look out and you've got your two idols playing either side of you, it gives you a great deal of security. In that particular team, I had my mentor, and probably mentor in life, Craig Davies from Western Australia, is playing behind me. Mark Hager, Terry Walsh, My attacking mids were in those days, inside forwards were incredible players. So Rick Charlesworth, Colin Batch, and Peter Hazelhurst. So yeah, we're talking probably a real golden era of Hockey Australia, and to be able to play with those players, what an opportunity to learn.
So when your sort of time come to sort of end, I guess, with the Kookaburras and that, what did you sort of think next once, you know, that era had sort of, if you, you know, once you sort of knew that?
Well, I'd sort of planned for that. So I started playing for Australia in 82 and finished in 1995. In 1986, I just finished study, and when I was in the Australian Institute of Sport in Perth, I did what in New South Wales is called a clerk of works in building, majoring in estimating and quantity surveying. And then suddenly realised, dawned on me that I couldn't actually get employed, because being away for 3 or 4 months every year, I mean, nobody would, and rightly so, employ you. So I was wondering what I was going to do with my life outside hockey, and the two things I was interested in was nutrition, physiology, and sports psychology. So when I was sitting in Pakistan one day with nothing to do, I devised an organisation that I thought I would start. And when I came back to Australia, I registered a company called Unlimited Potential. And Unlimited Potential was like no other organisation in Australia at that point in time. And we started business coaching in Australia. And we put 15,500 senior executives through health, physiology, nutrition, and stress management programs from 1986 to 3 years ago. So I was fully involved with that organisation for 26 years. And that's basically what I did outside the hockey environment, and it was a great move. It was very good to me, but I was also doing something that I really enjoyed. So therefore, I've only been in hockey from an administrative coaching level for the last 3 years now, and that's been really good. But I'm very, very thankful to my own organisation, Unlimited Potential, for the opportunity.
Yeah. Okay. So how's your role? So you're director of hockey. How's that sort of going? I mean, I know you're coaching the AHL men's team this year, and you're with the women the year before. So
So the role as director of coaching for Hockey New South Wales is completely separate to my own coaching opportunities, such as the AHL men and the AHL women. So coaching director for Hockey New South Wales basically is involved with managing and developing programs for our 26,000 members across the state, and specifically focusing on the development of opportunities for young kids going through to when we hand them over to the Australian side. So since I've been involved, we've made a lot of changes in Hockey New South Wales. We've employed 10 regional coaching coordinators to specifically live in the regions and to be able to influence the development of hockey players in the regions, as opposed to having to get them to come to Sydney all the time. We put into programs such as the AAP, which I developed, which is the Athlete Acceleration Program. And we've expanded that program from 40 under 18 athletes to 140 now statewide, to be able to fast track their development and provide expertise in their areas of hockey development. We've been able to put into places called the Centre of Development programs, which are under 9s, under 11s, under 13s and under 15s, which are again summer programs to be able to make sure that we're maximising the development for kids in the country and also the city. So we've done a lot of changes, and the challenge with that is that obviously that requires an enormous amount of work. So hockey is a sport that relies very heavily on our volunteer base, and it's about making sure that we not only rely on our volunteer base, but we actually acknowledge their value in the community and what they bring to hockey in New South Wales. I always say to people, without our volunteers, our coaches and our managers and our administrators, that Hockey New South Wales is nothing, because they're the people that have got the experience and they're the people that realistically make things happen.
Do you think hockey in general at the elite level gets enough exposure that it should? I mean, in your time, I remember watching the Barcelona Olympics and, you know, up sort of late sort of watching that, and seems to get that opportunity, I guess, on the mainstream TV come Olympics. But what's your thoughts on?
I think the difference between the hockey in Australia and the hockey in Europe is that the geography in Australia and the geography in New South Wales makes it really, really difficult.
Yeah.
You know, you go to a place like Holland or Belgium or Germany, and you've got a population that are closer in proximity. So therefore, when you talk about filling grandstands and you talk about really solid, you know, support, it's closer. And in New South Wales, for instance, I mean, you know, we obviously have a vast area. So therefore, to be able to make sure that we have got events where we can really promote television is much, much more difficult. And I think that's a challenge that I don't know how we're going to overcome. But realistically, for us to be able to go forward as a sport, you know, we need television exposure, and to be able to do that, we've got to be able to provide television with an opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, you tend to seem to get that. I mean, I know a lot sort of coming up now with opportunities with live streaming, and certainly within the hockey community, that's pretty sort of popular. Sort of being able to watch the, you know, for an example, the AHL guys, you know, in your living room, I guess.
Yeah.
Because, you know, technology's...
I think it's wonderful. I mean, I know the frustrations and the struggles that my parents and my friends used to have watching us on the Olympic Games, because obviously with only one medium coming back to Australia, one feed coming back to Australia through the network, they'd get halfway through a game of hockey and they'd go off to the diving or to the swimming or something, and that was really frustrating. Nowadays, I mean, one of the great things about the media coverage is that you can just live stream and you see the whole game,
yeah,
and you stay in contact with your siblings, and so there's a lot of really good benefits to modern technology in relation to being able to promote our game throughout the world.
So the AHL things, what was your sort of thought to the of this year with the men, and I know you sort of talked about the group and that you had there.
Well, the AHL, the Waratahs, are just a tremendous bunch of blokes.
Yeah.
Very, very dedicated hockey players. I feel as though that it's going to take us a while to be able to get to the level that's required to win an AHL.
Yeah.
It was my first exposure to the Waratahs this year, and there are certain areas of our game that I believe we need to really improve if we want to be able to win AHL in the men's division.
Yeah.
Fairly similar, I suppose, to what it was a few years ago when I first became involved with the women's side of the program with the Arrows. There were certain areas of the game that the Arrows realistically weren't strong on, and we corrected those over that period of time that we won the AHL and the women's last year. But I think as a group, both the coaching staff and the playing group, we learnt an enormous amount in Darwin. The starting point for next year will be much, much higher than what it was this year, because we've progressed so much as a group. What was probably frightening from my perspective is that I watched the under 13 state boys up there who were tremendous, and I saw the same characteristics in certain parts of their game as I did with the AHL guys, and I just wonder whether that has just been the way that we played hockey in New South Wales, and I don't want to give away too many secrets,
yeah,
but there's certain things that we need to be able to make sure that we're developing in our young kids, so therefore as they progress through the ranks, by the time they get to AHL, we've got a more productive way of being able to play in certain areas of the field. So it was a wonderful experience for me from a coaching point of view.
Yeah.
Obviously very, very disappointed that we didn't do, in my opinion, as well as what we wanted to. But in saying that, have learned enormous amount about the AHL, but also about what we need to do with our young kids, both male and female, at a very early age. So
yeah,
that's important.
Yeah. So just sort of closing, I mean, what sort of advice, a couple of questions I want to have, advice you give to, say, a young player it's trying to break through to the next level, could be a New South Wales team at a sort of junior level or even sort of senior. I know you sort of touched on about playing well and things, but what sort of advice would you give, you know, for someone that's had to sort of work pretty hard to sort of get there?
I mean, the the main thing is that you've got to have a really clear objective, in my opinion. You've got to have a very clear goal. And if you don't have a clear goal, you're probably not going to have the belief that's required to be able to get through the potholes and over the speed bumps and take the knocks and bruises that are required both on and off the field to be an elite level athlete. And that's really, really tough, because there are some people that get selected in every team, and there's others that don't get selected in any team that go on to eventually play for Australia. There's a number of Australian athletes that I know very well that realistically, for whatever reason, never got selected in junior state sides, whether it be for New South Wales or for any other state. So to be an elite level athlete requires an enormous amount of belief. It requires an enormous amount of courage. And I've always said to young people, you probably need to have a few people in life that believe in you. Your parents will always believe in you. You need to have a good coach that will believe in you. And the main person that needs to believe in you is yourself. And being human, when you miss selection or you get injured or you don't play as well as what you want to, that belief gets tested. And if you don't have a really specific and clear picture of where you want to end up, sometimes you can take an alternative pathway. That's the first thing I'd say. I'd say that the second thing is that surround yourself with good people that are honest with you and can provide you with the best advice, and make sure that what I call your DTE, or your daily training environment, is going to be supportive of your goals. In other words, if you want to be the best, if you want to be a Kookaburra, or if you want to be a Waratah, or on the other side of the program, if you want to be a Hockeyroo, or if you want to be an Arrow, your daily training environment will invariably determine whether you get there or not. And you need to be able to train day in, day out, and really be very, very focused on being able to achieve that.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice. What about on the flip side, from a coaching perspective? What would you give an upcoming sort of someone that's interested in coaching, or maybe going to the next level in coaching? What would you sort of recommend there? Would you coach us out on?
I just think coaching's an incredible challenge. I'm really happy that I had time away from the game after I finished playing hockey. So when I finished playing the Australian side, I was very burnt out in respect to being around hockey field. And it was only my daughters, when they were born and came home from school and told me they were playing hockey for a town that we lived in, and we didn't even have hockey teams, so that was a bit of a surprise to me as well. But they actually got me back into the sport, and I know lots of my mates have gone down the same path, that their kids have actually got them back into the sport. Coaching is an incredible challenge, because I think the best tool that you can actually have if you're a coach is to be a parent, because the skills that you learn through parenting at the end of the day will probably determine how you manage a lot of the pressure environments. And I know that might sound strange. The other thing with coaching is that regardless of whatever age you are, I mean, you just never stop learning. There's so many great coaches out there that I've come in contact with that do things a little bit differently, that sometimes think a little bit outside the box. And, you know, you can really learn off those people. And then you can incorporate that into your own coaching style, and as a result, hopefully become a better coach. I've never ever coached a tournament where I've come home and thought, I haven't learned. Yep. You normally come home, whether you've won or whether you haven't won, and go, wow, if I would have known that before I started this tournament, I would have been a better coach. And yep. I think that's yep. the motivation and the thing that actually makes a difference. So.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. All right, well, thanks for sitting down with me, mate. I appreciate being able to tap into your brain and get a bit of your background and history, and that's been informative. So.
No, thanks for the opportunity. I mean, it's, life's short. And the bottom line is, I've always thought that it's about maximising your opportunities and maximising your skill base. To do that, I think with all forms of business and all forms of athleticism, it takes an enormous amount of drive and courage and focus. You don't always get it right. You make mistakes. Sometimes you don't play as well as what you'd like to. But the bottom line is that if you maintain your focus, sometimes. Some way you always get to your destination. It just takes a lot of effort to be able to get there.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice. Right, fantastic. Thanks, man. Cheers.
Well done.
I hope you enjoyed our interview with Warren. It's been a long time between drinks in regards to different interviews, and we're hoping to add some more interesting guests in the coming months. For more information, videos, articles, or things in hockey, please go to our website, Google Inside the D Hockey. See you soon. Cheers.